Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome. It's good to see everybody. Thank you for coming out on a nice sunny day. And Baruch Hashem, we have a lot to discuss. I want to make a quick start. First of all, I want to thank our sponsors for the whole 2022 academic year. All the Zoom shirim have been sponsored very kindly, anonymously, for an aliyah for the neshamas of Rana Bas Bendit and Zelig Ben Kalman. Very grateful for that ongoing sponsorship. Also, we have two sponsorships for the live share today. Just encouraging you that if you feel that there's already someone who sponsored it, you can always sponsor it again. The shirim today are all dedicated for a speedy recovery for Rochalea Bas Chaya. Should be a refuah shalema. And also, all the shirim this morning are sponsored by Estelle Harris in memory of all the soldiers and victims of terror in Medinat Yisrael and for the safety of all Klal Yisrael, both here and abroad. So, amen to that, and thank you for the sponsorship. So, a reminder to turn off, please, your phones. Please turn off your phones, and so that we won't have angelic sound coming in from an unknown source. But we would definitely be better off without that. Okay. It's rare that we talk about an issue that is mamash so much in the news exactly as we talk about it, although that is the reason that I picked this issue now, or one of the reasons. But since last week, if you remember last week, I started with the OU's statement on abortion and the issues of Roe v. Wade, etc., and the plea, if you like, by the OU that it should not be used as a political football, and of course it is. Unsurprisingly being used in that way. Today is May the 18th, right? So yesterday in DC there was something called the Jewish Rally for Abortion Justice, which basically clearly allied the Jewish quote-unquote position on abortion as pro-choice. And the Jewish position is the liberal position and people aren't hearing the Jewish view. And that was a rally in D.C. I didn't go to the rally. I don't know how many people were there. But I'm sure there were lots of voices of people who, again, perfectly reasonable for people to express their political views on this. But to shoehorn that into Judaism is itself misleading. And on the other side, there was an article yesterday in Newsweek against the rally by a prominent rabbi in the Orthodox world who basically said that it's absolutely clear that the halachic position on abortion is pro-life. And he even said, quoted, that these other people suggest that an embryo before the embryo is born in somehow is less of a life than after that's born, and says such a position is inexplicable. No, it's not inexplicable. It's the position of many of the poskim, and indeed the position of Rashi, etc. So again, okay, maybe Dan Lekavskos, maybe he wrote a more complex article, which was more balanced, and Newsweek just printed bits of it. I mean, that's happened to me, that happens to anyone, so I don't know. I didn't speak to him, so I wouldn't be critical of him until I found out more. But again, to shoehorn the Orthodox position into pro-life is itself misleading, and then you end up basically in America with the two parts of the Jewish community clearly aligned with liberal Democrat causes and more conservative Republican causes, and that's not how Judaism works. Judaism is more sophisticated and Torah is more nuanced than that, and you can't just put it into one political party or another. What shocked me even more, by the way, is somebody pointed out this debate. One of my very close friends, Rabbi Shaul Robinson, posted about this on his Facebook. He's very good on Facebook. He, you know, gets people to be aware of what's going on, and I was just shocked by the language of some of the comments. You know, how people comment underneath the post, how people can speak about individuals in such an inappropriate way, even if you disagree with them. I mean, that to me was even more shocking. I don't know what is going on with people, but the fact that they feel they can speak about anybody they don't disagree with in a Facebook post in such a disgraceful manner, to me seems very very upsetting, which all, in my view, and you can take it or leave it, paints the picture that we need a very passionate middle. You know, everybody's very passionate at the extremes, and they expect that the middle people, the people who are more balanced, are going to be mediocre. The middle ground is not mediocre. The middle ground can be just as passionate as the extremes, and I think we should reclaim the passionate middle. That is not going to be my slogan. I'm not starting a political party, so you don't have to vote for me, but I feel it's not just me. There are many people said that. Robert Lichtenstein was very famous for saying that. But anyway, I think that's part of the issue. Anyway, back to abortion. But you see, this is very much in the news as we speak. What did we do last week? Last week we opened up. By the way, is it too hot or too cold in here? It's perfect. Okay, fine. Just wanted to check with you. We started with basically Rav Moshe Feinstein's position. And indeed, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that abortion is murder. He says it very clearly. And he said it has to be said and it has to be repeated. Because clearly in the Gemara it says that for a non-Jew to abort a fetus is clearly actionable murder, which is liable to the death penalty. And he quotes Tosfos, that there cannot be anything which for a non-Jew is prohibited, but for a Jew is less prohibited. Can't be. Therefore, if it's murder for a non-Jew, it must be murder for a Jew as well. Technically, the Jew doesn't get the death penalty for murdering a fetus, says Rav Moshe. Okay, you're off on a technicality. Just like you don't technically get the death penalty for murdering somebody who is already deathly ill. It's no less murder. He's just not technically liable to capital punishment. But clearly said, Rav Moshe, it's murder. I gave you a conundrum last week and said, is there anything which could be possibly permitted for a Jew, which is prohibited for a non-Jew? Someone came up with the answer straight after the shiur, but I gave you a clue. I said breakfast was the clue, and the answer might be eggs. It could be that eggs are avim min hachai, and as avim min hachai, you take out a whole thing from a living animal. As avim min hachai, maybe it's prohibited for a non-Jew to eat eggs. It's clearly permitted for a Jew to eat eggs because it says in the posuk explicitly that if you need the eggs to eat for breakfast, you have to chase away the mother bird. But maybe that posuk is only for Jews, and it could be that working as an omelette chef in a non-Jewish hotel is very problematic. If you're thinking of that career move, then consult an appropriate Orthodox posuk. Okay. But today we need to go on to other approaches. We actually have a lot to do today. I didn't quite finish last week what I wanted to do last week, but I put it onto this week's sheet, so we have a little bit extra to do, and I don't want to rush it too much. Rav Moshe's view, obviously, is a very clear, legitimate view in Halacha, but there are others as well, and I want to bring you three or four other approaches. We already saw last week Rav Shaul Yisraeli, the Eretz Chemda movement is very focused on his psak, who said it's clearly not murder. What, if it's not murder, then what might it be? So I brought you three or four other suggestions. First of all, maybe abortion is the destruction of a potential life. So let's have a look at that. Look at the Chavos Yair. The Chavos Yair, Rav Yair Bachrach, in the late 17th century, says the following. Shaloi nigra misasoi, we cannot cause the death of a fetus. Devadai osa lechadchila, clearly this is prohibited. But why? Be'issa hotza'at shichvat zera levatola. Just like you are not allowed to destroy a sperm unnecessarily, because that could lead to a potential life, so too, even more so, with an embryo. An embryo is clearly a stage more into a life than a sperm is. It's already fertilized. The hatam mishum ra'oi liyus noitzer mikol tipa zera kodesh. Every single drop here means every single embryo could become zera kodesh. It could become a Jew. You are not allowed to prevent the development of a potential Jew. Now immediately you see this is very different from murder. For example, does this apply to non-Jews? Maybe not in the same way. Okay, although we saw explicitly that non-Jews are addressed by the Gemara. But also, this is not murder, and therefore, shichvat zera, bitl shichvat zera levatola, it has to be levatola. It has to be for no good reason. It will be easier to weigh on the scales of abortion a good reason that we are allowed to terminate this embryo, a fetus, if indeed this is the prohibition, much easier to weigh that than murder. Even though this prohibition, if you look here in number 2, Asala Haitzi Shikh Vazera Levatala, says the Rambam, that here he's talking about the sperm angle, not the embryo, it's prohibited. She'isa gadolhu uke'ilu hoireg hanefesh. It's as if it's murder, and I'm not getting into the whole debate about how this is dealt with in practical terms and educating to this, but it's not murder, but it's a serious prohibition, very serious. One of the implications, however, might be that does this apply to women? Murder clearly applies to men and women alike. But does this prohibition focus mainly on men, or are women included? Have a look at this Gemara number 3. Gemara in Yevamos. Shalosh nashim mishamshes b'moich, excuse me. There are three women who are maybe allowed to, maybe obligated to, have relations, sexual relations, b'moich. A moich is a birth control mechanism. some way to avoid becoming pregnant. Who are these three women? Katana, a very young woman who is too small to carry a baby healthily, and she will be endangered by the pregnancy. She's not allowed to get pregnant. Mu'uberet, a woman who is already pregnant. And we're worried, specifically in Shitat Rebbe Meir, which we're not getting into now, that if she's already pregnant and she has relations without contraception, she might get pregnant again, and the second embryo will squash against the first embryo and cause all manner of problems. Is this possible that a woman who is pregnant can get pregnant again? It is, yes, it's called superfetation. It's very rare, but it's possible. If a woman ovulates on the first or second or so months of her pregnancy, she could become pregnant again, and indeed there are women who do that. You can look that one up on Google and see. It's not very common at all, but it's possible. Umenika, and also a woman who is a menika, who is nursing, that's a more standard case, that a woman who's nursing, if she becomes pregnant, her milk will dry up, then that will be a danger to the baby she's nursing, and there may be no other option for that baby. Okay, I'm not interested in birth control right now. I'm interested in this woman who's using a moich. This woman is somehow preventing a pregnancy, legitimately in these three cases. Number four, says the Tosfos, Peirush HaKuntres, Mutar Lashamish B'moich. These women are allowed to use a moich. The implication being, other women are not, and I'm not getting into that debate now. Aval Shar Nashim Asur Mishum Hashchatat Shichvat Zera. That other women are not allowed, according to Rashi, to use a moich, because that would be destroying the seed, and women are included in that. Even the women are not obligated in Pruravu. Anyone who's in Daf Yomi, we've just done all the sugis of Pruravu, so later on we'll see again. Women are not obligated in the chiyuv of Pruravu. Men have an obligation to have children. Women have a mitzvah to have children. It's not an obligation. Says Rashi, that's got nothing to do with destroying potential life. Women are just as obligated not to use birth control, except in very rare occasions, and therefore would be just as obligated not to do an abortion. Tosa says, no. Rabbeinu Tam Oimer, no. Im noisenis moich achatashmish. If she takes some kind of anti-pregnancy measure after she has relations, then einir lasa, then that's not prohibited for this woman. Because a woman is allowed to put a relationship birth control method in place, because women are not obligated in the prohibition of destroying a potential life. Since it's all linked up according to Rabbeinu Tam. So there you have a debate. Are women included? Are women not included? There's also a side mitzvah, which I'm not getting into so much now, number five. There's a posik in Yeshayahu, which is Lashevet Yitzara. The world was created to be populated. That's a rabbinic level mitzvah, and there are those that say women are included in that. So this debate really will determine whether we want to say that a woman is less prohibited, if you like, from carrying out an abortion. And then indeed the Tzitz Eliezer says that where an abortion is required, it's preferable to find a Jewish doctor over a non-Jewish doctor, because for non-Jews we saw the position was unequivocal, and it's preferable to find a female doctor to a male doctor. Because there is this debate as to whether, abortion is not murder, but it's wasting or avoiding or destroying a potential life. But again, like I said, the grounds on which you'll be allowed to do abortion will be broader, as opposed to murder, where there is no grounds for a murder at all, except in the case of abortion, we see later, we saw last week, in order to save the mother's life. And we didn't really fully resolve that question last week. Why should it be indeed allowed to abort a fetus if it's murder to save the mother's life? You can't offset one life to save another. We'll come back to that soon. Fine. So potential life is one option. Abortion is unlawful. Wounding, I don't want to get into that too much now. There is a prohibition on wounding. It's a Torah prohibition. You're not allowed to hit people. You're not allowed to hurt people. The key words, though, here in the Rambam, if you look in the Rambam number 8, you're not allowed to wound yourself. And you're not allowed to wound other people. Even if you just hit someone without drawing blood, okay, Adam Kosher, an innocent person, Israel, from the Jewish people, Ben Cotton, Ben Gadol, Ben Ish, Ben Isha, Derech Nitzayon. We had a whole shir on this once. Derech Nitzayon. If you wound people in an aggressive way, in a fight, that's the Torah prohibition. So that, of course, raises the question, what is Derech Nitzayon? It's not a problem to have an operation. That's not an aggressive wounding, that's a productive, constructive wounding. So two, when will an abortion be constructive? That's going to, again, be more of a balance, unlike in the situation of murder, where we really don't have anything to balance it either way. Of course, this source is good for discussions about boxing and aggressive sports and all that stuff, but that's not for now. Next, is the fetus really part of the mother? And this is fundamental. We never got to this last week, but we need to look at this today. Have a look at number 9. Interesting Mishnah in Erechim. A tragic Mishnah, but one which came up from time to time. Ha'isha she'yatz'ah le'hareg. A woman is liable to the death penalty. She's committed a capital crime, she's a murderer, whatever it is, and turns out she's pregnant. What do we do? Do we kill the woman now, even though the fetus will die as well? Or do we say, you know something, wait till she has the baby, and then we'll carry out the execution? Even though, of course, the Gemara says, execution's hardly ever happened, it's more theoretical than practical, but in principle, this is very important for us, conceptually. We do not wait until she gives birth. We'll execute her, at least theoretically, now. But when she's already on the birthing stool, she's having contractions, the birth is in process. Says the Mishnah, then we have to wait. Why? What's the difference? Last week we saw there's a distinction if the baby's in or if the baby's out. Right? Once the baby's out, majority, either majority head or majority breech birth, so that's born. That's called a human living person, and you can't kill one person to save another. This baby is just on the way out. Okay? It's already presented, maybe that's the word. I'm not a gynecologist, but my wife had a couple of babies, and I have a rough recollection of how this thing works. So the baby is on the way out. Fine. By the way, my wife had a baby in a National Health Hospital on a Friday night when everyone was down at the pub. Well, advice, don't have a baby on Friday night in London when everyone's down at the pub, because there won't be many people to help you have the baby. Okay, at least not 25 years ago. Maybe it's all much better now, but that's another story. Baruch Hashem, my daughter turned out fine. So, fine. Says the Gemara, Pshita. Of course. You know, you can't. Of course there's no problem killing the baby, if executing the mother with the baby inside her. Gufahi, it's her body. Takes it as obvious. The baby's just like her liver or her heart or her spleen. The baby's just another organ. The baby's not a separate being. Isn't so? Why do you need to tell me that it's okay to execute the mother? Why would I think otherwise? No. It's derich. I need to know this. Why? Look at the half a minute. Sal kadaita chamina. You might have thought, since the Torah says ka'asha yashis alav bal ha'isha. Remember the pasuk we learned last week? If a man injures a pregnant woman and she loses the baby, then the husband can sue for the loss, the financial loss caused by, he's caused the loss of his child. I might think that I can't kill the mother, execute the mother, because of the financial rights of the husband. You know, what right do I have to take away his rights because of this child? No. That's what you might have thought. Mamona debalhu v'loylev said to me. You might have thought you can't take that away. That's what it's teaching us, not a problem there. So it's nothing to do with the fact that the fetus is independent. The fetus is not independent at all. Yashba ala mashber, but once she's already sitting in the birth scenario, then I can't execute the mother. Why not? My timer. Why can't I execute the mother? Kaven, the akar, since the baby is now separated, gufa achrinahu. It's a different body. That's interesting, because now it seems to be suggesting that there's another stage. When the baby is inside the mother earlier, it's part of the mother, and therefore it's not independent at all. Once the baby has started the process to go down the birth canal, then that already is a separate body. Then I have to treat it differently. I am still allowed to kill it in order to save the mother. Interestingly, but there are stages. You see here, there are stages in this process. Okay, before we leave this, just go over to page 3, and then we'll get into the new material. This is all stuff that I really wanted to finish last week, but let's finish this now. I brought you a Radvaz, Rav David Ibn Zimra, from Egypt in the 16th century. He writes a very difficult shaila, He says, "Benashim shimeses machmas leida," women who loyaleinu die in childbirth. This, of course, used to be quite common. In the 19th century in Britain, 1 in 3 women died in childbirth, which was much worse than in the ancient world. But this obviously was something, Baruch Hashem, one of the miracles of our times. The issue of why childbirth is so is so dangerous, is fascinating, especially in light of the psukim in Bereishis with Chava, the childbirth will be so critical. Lahavdil, other animals in the world manage to give birth with no problem at all, almost without noticing. Yeah, a primate, a monkey, can give birth within 2 or 3 minutes. The problem with human beings is that the birth canal is on average an inch narrower than the average width of a fetus's head. And that is potentially the most painful inch in the universe. Okay? And that's why that's why all of this stress is happening, which hashkafically is very interesting as well, not getting into that now. But he says, a woman who nebach dies in childbirth, the havlad mefarper bebitna, but this child is still moving inside her, the dead woman. That can happen. The hanashim makas al bitna, and he says the women, the Egyptian midwives, used to have, not in the time of Paro, but in the 16th century, used to have a practice. But machbedi, they used to hit the woman and they used to kill the baby in utero because there's nothing they could do. Now, they were able sometimes to do cesarean sections if the mother had died. Meaning the idea of a cesarean section, which will save the life of the baby and the mother, was unheard of until modern medicine. The Rambam even writes that everybody knows that if you do a cesarean, the mother will die. You cannot save the mother with a cesarean. But in this case, for whatever reason, these Egyptian midwives weren't even doing a cesarean. The woman was dead, and they were terminating the fetus. Lakaribes misasoi, they were trying to bring closer the death of this fetus. I'm not sure exactly why they weren't able to do a cesarean then. Im yesh bezeh mishum atilas neshama, is that murder? Again, I apologize for the graphic nature of the Shiloh, but that's exactly our case. Is it murder to kill a fetus that's actually about to come out? Right, I think that these are Jewish midwives here. I think I don't think that the non-Jews are asking him a Shiloh. I think someone's asking him a Shiloh about the Jewish Egyptian midwife practice at the time. Tshuva, look what he says. Vaday roi legor banashim ha'oses kacha. You absolutely have to stop the women doing this. They cannot do this. Mishum demechsi ke'ein ritzicha. Very important words. It looks terrible. It looks like they're murdering someone. Now, mechsi ke'ein ritzicha is not murder. It's bad, but it looks like murder. And he goes on. Aval ein bedavazel mishum ritzicha. It's not actually murder. It's clear to me it's not murder. It's other things. The in ritzicha pshita de ein nera galav. You're going to get a capital crime, certainly for killing this fetus. Kevin shelo yatzel aver oilam, since it's not come into the world. The had mechallel in alav esa Shabbos, and we'll come back to this soon. We'll mention this now, though. But you can break Shabbos in order to save a fetus, even very early stages when it's not viable. How can that be? Mishum de safek hu misveika nefasha is mechallel in alav esa Shabbos. You're allowed to break Shabbos even for very doubtful cases. No, even if there's a safek, double many level questions on pikuach nefesh, you can always break Shabbos for that. So you can't prove, these are not linked. These are not linked. The fact that you can break Shabbos to save this fetus does not necessarily mean that it is murder to kill this fetus. The two issues are separate. This baby has no cheskat chias. This baby is not really fully alive yet. And therefore he objects strongly to the practice of these women. Presumably they should try to do a cesarean. I mean, what have they got to lose? Because the Nebuch, the mother's already died, but he said absolutely, it is not murder, they cannot do this, but it is not murder if they do. And of course, this is a very relevant question. There was a Shiloh in World War I, a German officer, in World War I, not World War II, a German officer, Nebuch raped a Jewish girl who became pregnant. And then he took her to a Jewish doctor and demanded that the doctor perform an abortion. I took out a gun, put it to the doctor's head, and said, unless you perform an abortion, then I'm going to kill you. So, if he said, unless you kill this other guy, I'm going to kill you, so then we know the halacha. A person has to die rather than murder someone else. Because who says that your blood is redder, as the Gemara says, than their blood? But this is a fetus. Do you have to die rather than murder a fetus or kill a fetus? Rav Moshe Feinstein may argue, well, it's murder. Although it's still not quite the same, is it? Because you are allowed to kill the fetus, even obligated, in order to save the mother. But if it's any of these other things which are not murder, then there's nothing to talk about. I don't have to die rather than not bring a potential life or wound someone, etc. So you see how these shilas come up, and we'll get more shilas a little bit like this coming in. Okay, fine. Let's go on. We're doing very well. Again, Daf Yomi a couple of days ago, the famous question of a fetus less than 40 days gestation. We've been talking about a fetus in very late stages. What about very early stages? Often women don't even know they're pregnant within 40 days of gestation. But the Gemara re-raises that question. Number 12, says the Mishnah in Nida, Hamapelet liyom mem, a woman who has a miscarriage, Nebach, on the 40th day of gestation. Eina chesheshes levlad. She doesn't have to worry that it's a baby. She doesn't have tumat leida, tumat yoledet, because it's not called a birth of any kind. Leyom mem aleph, but on the 41st day already, oh, different. Teshev lezachar, ula nekeva, ula nida. She has to assume. Nida, first of all, there'll be bleeding of some kind from the uterus. And second of all, maybe this was a boy, maybe this was a girl. She can't tell, it's too early. But it was a birth of some kind. So what's going on? Before, within 40 days? Not. After 40 days? Yes. Says the Gemara in Yevamos, number 13, Amar of Chizda, ad arba'im maya ba'alma hi. Famous phrase, until 40 days, this is just fluid. It's bodily fluid. Now, we saw before that maybe even after 40 days, a baby is part of the mother. But before 40 days, it's not even part of, it's not even an organ. It's just bodily fluid. So how does that impact on the question? So if you say the prohibition is murder, well, you can't, there's no such thing as murdering bodily fluid. Okay? But if you say it's not bringing a potential life into being, well, this bodily fluid is just as much potential life as it will be in a month from now, right? So, again, the reason for abortion will depend on how you interpret that. However, many poskim have ruled that this pre-40-day, this 40-day limit, has many implications in halacha. For example, number 14, Rav Chaim Ozik Brzezinski says that even for a non-Jew, which is a higher level of liability, there will be no capital crime pre-40 days. For a Jew, he says, it would not be a Torah prohibition. He says very clearly, look at here, number 14, the second part of the source, V'nira de ben noyach, einenu nera galzeh, v'gam b'Yisrael efsha de'ein isur min ha-Torah. He says efsha. He says it may be that it's downgraded significantly. And certainly many poskim, when asked shilas, again, anything I say today is not meant to be a psak on any level of any kind. I'm not a posek for anything, okay, not even in my own backyard. And I'm certainly not a posek on anything like this. There are wonderful poskim around that can be asked on this. But many poskim are much more lenient on the pre-40 day issue, especially if the embryo is not even implanted. For example, the morning after pill. The morning after pill works in different ways, different kinds of pills, but very often works to prevent implantation. Certainly, it's before the 40th day, obviously, by definition. And therefore, there are poskim who are much more lenient on this. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, certainly in the case of, God forbid, of rape, where there's a danger of pregnancy. Again, other poskim are more lenient even after this on certain things. But certainly before this, this is a watershed, if you like, in embryo development, and the halacha will change. Fine. Next. Breaking Shabbos to save a fetus. Can we or can't we? Absolutely we can. Number 15. Ha'esha she'ashva ala mashber. A woman who is giving birth, umeisa b'Shabbos, and she dies, and it's Shabbos. Meivin sakin umakrim es kreisa. We break Shabbos. We cut open. We do a cesarean, an emergency cesarean. Again, not to save the mother, but to save the child. Umoitzin es avlad. Even though this may be chilul Shabbos, and the Ramban adds in Teres HaAdam number 16, quoting the Korban Asanel, afilu b'hatzalas uba pachas mi ben arbaim. Even a bodily fluid embryo, which is just forming, less than 40 days, we still break Shabbos. She'ein bo chiyas klal, there is no life in that embryo at all, halakhically. Again, it's not a zero, but it's not alive in any sense. Mechalelin, we'd break Shabbos, the das bal halachas, according to the Bahag, according to the Ramban. Why? Not because of v'chai behem. V'chai behem doesn't apply here. There is no v'chai behem, because this fetus, excuse me, is not alive. But because v'shamru v'nei shalesa Shabbos. Why do we break Shabbos? Not just because life takes precedence, but because Shabbos takes precedence. Break one Shabbos so that the person will be able to keep multiple Shabboses, so that applies to an embryo. Even though an embryo is not yet alive, it doesn't matter because we have to break Shabbos in order to increase the long-term chilul Shabbat. Shmirat Shabbat.
What if it's so early in the pregnancy that it's not likely to be viable?
It might be. I mean, she's dehydrated. She's pregnant and she's dehydrated and suddenly needs to get. And then we know that she's very, very early stage pregnancies, and we don't want her to lose the fetus. We're allowed to, according to the Ramban, we're allowed to break Shabbos in order to do what we need to. Even in the fetus might be viable. It's just that she's got herself into a difficult situation, not her fault, and therefore we can do that. Okay, fine. Now let's get into. Someone asked me at the end of last week's shir, why didn't you talk about Roydeif? So I said, come back next week, and next week we'll talk about Roydeif. And here's where it starts to get, I think, more interesting and certainly more conceptual. Let's do a little bit of Chazara. Number 70. Let's launch into this. Ha'isha shehi maksha leilet, a woman who is having difficulty giving birth, mechatchen es avlad b'meyeha, we cut up, we abort the fetus inside her, u'moitzina se'ivarim avarim, we bring it out even limb from limb, b'pnei shechayeh ha'kovim l'chayav. Her life takes precedence over its life. Now, interestingly, its life implies that it does have some level of life. It may not have a cheskas chias, it may not be clearly alive, but at least has the strong potential to be alive. Now, yatsaruba, once the baby comes out, majority, either head or body, depending on the presentation, ein noigimbo, we can't touch it, she'ein dochi nefesh mipnei nefesh, because we never set aside one life for another life. So again, get this clear. When the baby is still inside, we kill the baby to save the mother. When the baby has come out, majority, can't touch it. Ah, but they both might die. What can you do? You can't kill one person, says the Mishnah, to save another. And once the baby is majority emerged, it's a person. Fine. Over the page. Rashi, we saw last week, says, the chol's man shelo yatsa la'ave, all the time it hasn't come out into the air, at least majority la'ave, olam, lav nefesh hu. It is not a real nefesh. It's not a zero. You can't just terminate. We certainly are not pro-choice in that sense. We're not pro-life either. It's pro-something else. We'll see, you know, from the whole situation. But it's not a nefesh. You're allowed to kill it in order to save the mother. According to Rav Moshe Feinstein, even though it would be murder to kill it, because it's enough of a nefesh to be murder, it's not enough of a nefesh to be preserved when there's an even more of an nefesh, if you like, the mother who is as a cheskes kliyos, who is going to be endangered. Aval yatsa roisho, if the head comes out, etc., ein nogim bo. Now, here we have to ask the question: why? Why can't I kill this baby, even if it's, you know, it's stuck? This is a tragic situation. The baby is stuck. It can't get out. The doctors can't do anything. The only way they can save the mother's life is by killing the baby. Said the Mishnah, you can't do that. The baby's already halfway out. I'm sorry. It's a person. So the Gemara asks, number 19. Yatsa roisha oy ein nogimbo. If she quotes the Mishnah, if the head came out, you can't touch it. L'fishein dochi nefesh mipnei nefesh. Says the Gemara, am I? Why not? Roideif hu. This baby is a roideif. What's a roideif? A roideif is classic case. A is chasing B to kill B. You are allowed, even obligated, to kill A, who is the roideif, who is chasing, in order to save the life of B. You have to intervene. So this is, isn't this a classic case, says the Gemara? You have this life, A, this baby, who is chasing, if you like, it's causing, it's not the mother that's causing the problem for the baby. The baby's causing the problem for the mother. So why can't you kill it? Like a roideif, says the Gemara, Shani Hasam. It's a different case. It's not like a roideif. Du mishamaya karatile. A normal roideif makes a choice to try and kill someone else. This baby is mina shamayim is doing. This baby is not doing anything by choice. This baby is just doing what nature is telling it to do. That's not a roideif. Now, get clear. Be clear here. It's not because the baby is innocent. The Catholics make a big focus on the baby's innocent. A roideif could also be innocent. Let's give you a case scenario. You're walking through the forest, and you see man A with a gun, with a rifle, who is about to, he's trying to shoot deer. He's gone hunting for the day. Okay, don't do this in England, because all the deer belong to the Queen, and therefore you'll get yourself into terrible trouble, locked in the Tower of London, who knows what. Okay? But he's about to shoot this deer, and you realize with horror that this deer is really a human being wearing an antler hat. Okay? Maybe he's on his stag night. Okay? And you realize with horror that this man is about to shoot completely by accident, a totally innocent person. The man is still a roide. It's not that he's a bad man, he's not trying to do it on purpose, but he is, without realizing it, about to kill another person. You can still kill A or stop him in some way in order to save B. But the baby is even worse than that. The baby is not only innocent, but he's not making any choice whatsoever. And therefore, says the Gemara, you may not terminate this child. You may not, the child is a child. It's not a rode. Okay? Makes sense. The problem, and this is where all of the discussion really arises on this, is that Rambam seems to say the opposite of the Gemara. Have a look at number 20. Here we need to focus very carefully. Says the Rambam. He's talking generally about the importance of not having any sympathy or empathy for the roidef. You have to get rid of the roidef. And we had some shearing, by the way, a while ago about the trolley, what they call trolleyology, about the trolley cases where there's a, you know, a train hurtling down the track and you can, you know, change the train from this track to that track and kill these people to save these people. We had a whole shear about that, if you remember. We linked it into the idea of driverless cars, where they have to program the cars what to do, you know, if a small child walks in the road and there's an old person walking that way or three people walking that way, which way does the car swerve and hit which people in order to save which people? They have to decide how to program these cars and which algorithms to put in. Okay? And we had that whole shear, but that's not for now. But says the Rambam, you can't have any sympathy for a roidif. Number 20. Here is a mitzvah loy tase. It's a negative mitzvah. Shaloy lachus al nefesh a roidif. Don't hesitate in killing a roidif if you have to. Lefika choru chachamim. That's why the rabbis taught sheha ubara, a pregnant woman, shehi maksha leled, who is having a terrible birth, mutar lachtoi chauba b'meyeher. You're allowed to cut the baby up inside her, bein basam, whether you do an abortion through medical means, through chemical means, bein b'yad, or even directly. Why can you kill the baby inside her? Mipnei shehu karoidif. Because the baby is like a roidev. Roidev achreha lahorga. The baby is chasing her to kill her. The im shehaitzi rosho. But when it puts its head out, ein nogimbo. Now you can't kill the baby. She ein dochi nefesh mipnei nefesh. Because you can never kill one person to save another. Vezet tivushal oilam. And this is just the natural way of the world. This is a very problematic and difficult rambam. Because first of all, ein dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. That's the whole point of roidef, that you're unable to kill one person to save another. Okay, he says this is natural, but why is he even talking about roidef? Didn't the Gemara reject the whole idea of roidef? The Gemara says, why is this baby not like a roidef? Because it's natural. So apparently, according to the Rambam, when the baby's still inside her, it is like a roidef. So the Rambam obviously reads this Gemara, that the Gemara is saying once the baby's out, it's not a roidef. But when the baby's in, look at his language, he doesn't say it's a roidef. What did the Rambam say? Mipnei shehu karodef. The baby is a quasi-rodef when it's still inside. Okay. Why does this matter? It matters a great deal. According to Rashi, why am I allowed to, even obligated to, abort the baby to save the life of the mother? Because the baby is not really as alive as the mother. That's his reasoning. Nothing to do with Rodef. According to the Rambam, the reason I'm allowed to terminate the baby in order to save the mother is because the baby is like a Rodef. It's a different reason. Or maybe both reasons. Maybe he says the baby is A, not alive as much, and also like a Rodef. Why does that matter? Let me give you a couple of scenarios. What if the baby is indirectly endangering the life of the mother? Let's say the mother has a heart defect, and the baby's not doing anything directly right now in terms of the birth that endangers the mother, but the increase in risk or blood pressure, whatever it is, because of the baby, is because the mother has another condition, unrelated, is going to endanger the life of the mother. Okay, so if it's a question of pikuach nefesh, you know, it's pikuach nefesh. But if it's an issue of rodef, we don't say that rodef applies with an indirect danger. I'll give you an example. Let's say man A and man B are waiting for, A and B are waiting for an inoculation against a deadly disease which is ripping through the community, and everybody needs the inoculation. And man A, he gets to the front of the queue, and they say to him, you're the lucky one. This is the last vaccination in the country, and you're getting it. So man B is hearing this behind him, thinking, this guy's a Rydev. Meaning, because this guy's taking my inoculation, my vaccination, I'm not going to get vaccinated. Takes out a gun, shoots him. You're a Rydev, you're endangering my life, you're taking the last vaccination. No, that's not a Rydev. Kind of a Rydev with an indirect mechanism like that. So if the bait, if you're really worrying about Rydev, so maybe a danger to the mother's life through an indirect means would be different to a direct means. That's an interesting question there. Also, what if there is a Shaila? I don't know if the mother's life is in danger. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. So if the question is simply pikuach nefesh, so what do we say? Sofek? It's still pikuach nefesh, right? There's a doubt. There's a doubt of a doubt. There's a doubt of a doubt of a doubt. It's pikuach nefesh. You have to save a life. What about a Rydev case? What if I'm not sure if this man is actually a Rydev? Might be. He might not be. I might have read it wrong. Maybe there's a completely different explanation. It's not so clear that Rydev applies when you don't know if this person's a Rydev. So again, how you classify this might be extremely important in terms of what you're allowed to do in order to save the mother. So I think you can think of other applications where if you think of it as a Rydev, it'll be A, but if you think of it as a case of it's not a nefesh and the mother has to be saved because that's pikuach nefesh, then it may be B. I'll give you another example. What about a non-Jewish baby with a non-Jewish mother, and the baby is endangering the life of the mother? So do you say that a fetus is not alive? A fetus is not alive, it's not alive. It's the same thing. Or do you say, no, the fetus is alive, there's just a heter of a Rydev, and it's a different kind of heter, and it might apply differently in a case of a non-Jewish baby or a Jewish baby. And is it to do with the baby, or is it to do with the person doing the abortion? You see how this classification issue could have major implications. And this is, let me go back to what I said at the very beginning of last week. The Chazon Ish said, beginning of last year, we don't just guess these issues. I told you about the woman I sat next to on the plane, right? I didn't tell you about the woman on the plane. I sat next to a woman on the plane going from Houston to Miami. I'm English. I don't usually talk to people on planes. Okay, that's not, you know, all rabbis have plane stories. I was on a plane, you know, I don't talk to people because I'm English and, you know, it's fine. So she talked to me. All right, so if people talk to me, I will talk back. I'm not that English. So she talked to me. She was a young woman. She said to me, are you a rabbi? No, are you Jewish? She said, are you Jewish? Okay, I'm wearing a kippah. I'm wearing, okay, you know. So I said, I am Jewish, actually. She goes, oh, I thought you were. Okay, very nice. I didn't know where this is going. You know, you always dread these conversations, you know. And she said, I wanted to ask because I'm a theology teacher in a Catholic school in America. So, yes, Shekayach, you're a theology teacher, you worked out I was Jewish. Okay, you know, whatever. But fine, I didn't say that. So I smiled. I said, okay, that's nice. And we had a little chat. And she said, where do you live? And I said, I live in Israel. And she said, oh, I've always wanted. She must have been about 24, 25. She's a young teacher. She said, I've always wanted to go to Israel. So I said, so come. You know, there's lots of people, come. So she goes, I would go, but my mother won't let me. I asked my mother a couple of years ago, there was a trip, a Catholic trip to Israel, to the Holy Land. My mother said, I can't go. I said, why? What does your mother say? She said, it's too dangerous. I mean, she's coming from Texas, you understand. But okay, fine. So she said, it's too dangerous. She said, but really, my whole life's dream, it will be fulfilled if I go to the Holy Land. And it's just like, it really hurts me that I can't go because my mother said it's dangerous. So I said to her, why do you feel you have to listen to your mother on this particular issue if it's so important to you? So she looks at me and she said, it says in the Bible you have to obey your parents. I said, no, it doesn't. It doesn't say that at all. She goes, doesn't it? I go, no, it doesn't. It says you have to give kavod for your parents, which is to look after them and to make sure they have everything they need. And yira, respect your parents. It doesn't say you have to do everything they say. I said, do Catholics say you have to do everything your parents say? She goes, well, no, not everything. So I said, well, where do you draw the line? She goes, well, I think once you're emancipated, then it's okay. I said, well, when are you emancipated? Is that an age thing? Is she goes, well, I'm not entirely sure. I think it's in the catechism, but it's I think it depends on the case. So I said to her, like, really, you know, it seems a bit confused. She goes, yeah, I wish I'd had you to ask a question to when I was speaking to my mother. Okay? That's nice. So I said to her, you know, with all due respect, this shows why you need halacha. You know, you do away with halacha and say that you don't need the law. At the end of the day, you end up just making it up as you go along. Because that's clearly what's going on here. I mean, I said it in a nice way. Okay? But I said, it's clear, you know, without halacha, it's all very well saying that the devil's in the detail, which is a very anti kind of Torah type focus. But it's not true unless you have some principles from somewhere. You're going to be making this stuff up as you go along. And that's why the Chazon Ish said, beginning of last week, at the end of the day, moral, ethical decisions are based in halachic principles. We're trying to work out which way to go, not based on, you know, what we feel or how we think it should be, but based on real sources which are helping us to do that. Okay, so now I have a plain story. Now I'm a real rabbi. The other thing is, rabbis always saw movies on planes, right? I saw a movie on a plane. Right, you saw the movie on the plane. You're only fine. Not for now. The next issue. Fascinating. The Tiferes Yisrael, really picking up on Rashi, says, okay, you can kill the fetus to save the mother. Maybe you even, you know, you can open the mother with the mother's dead to save the fetus. What if you can't save anybody? What if everybody's going to die, even the fetus, unless you do something? His case is as follows. The child is already emerged at the point at which the Mishnah said you can't touch it anymore because it's alive. It's now been born and you cannot take one life. It's not a roidef. It's a natural thing, right? We said all that. Says the Tiferes Yisrael, but what if I do nothing and everybody will die? What does that achieve? Okay, I can't kill this baby to save the mother, but the baby's going to die itself. And he says, look at what he says in number 21, in the middle of there, Aval im kishelo namito, if we don't kill this born, half-born child, yamutu shnehem, then they'll both die, ma'atzman, automatically, esha shemutel hamitavlad. Then maybe you can even intervene and kill the child, it's half-born, kidei lahatzil al kol panim imo, at least you can save the mother. Because the child's going to die anyway. Ukamasa the Sheva ben Bichri. And he brings in Sheva ben Bichri. You were waiting to hear when Sheva ben Bichri was going to make an appearance. What's with Sheva ben Bichri? Number 22, which we talked about as well. Says the Yerushalmi. Bnei Adam shehayim ahalchim b'derech upago lehem goyim. They were people who were kidnapped on the street. Va'amru, and the people who kidnapped them says, Tnu lanu echad michem. Okay, you have to give over one of you. V'nar gosar, we'll kill that one person and let the rest of you go. V'im lav, hare anu horgim et kulchem. And if not, we're going to kill all of you. So you choose somebody and hand them over. If not, we're going to kill everybody. Says the sorcerer, the brisa, afilu kulam neragim. Even if they're all going to end up dying, lo yimasru, yimsru nefesh echachat miyisrael. You cannot hand over a person. You cannot choose a person that will save your skin. Nebuch, this was a shaila often in the Holocaust, that people had these terrible situations where they had to hand over one person to save. You can't hand over anyone. However, yichdu lahem echad, but if the kidnapper said, we want that guy over there, specifically, kagayin Sheva ben Bichri, what's the case of Sheva ben Bichri? Sheva ben Bichri was a rebel against David HaMelech, and Yoav besieges the town and says to the town, hand this guy over, otherwise we're going to kill the whole town, because you're harboring a rebel against the king. And the Ishachachama there, she cuts off his head, she throws it over, they hand him over, they kill him and said that's it, to save themselves. That's okay. Because they specified this person. They can hand him over, they don't need to be killed. Because what's the point in them being killed? They're all going to die anyway, including this person. And they specified, there's someone specific, it's not them choosing a random individual. Someone's already been earmarked, dead man walking. He's already going to die in either event, because he's been earmarked. So Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, so Rav Lakish comes in and says, "V'hu sheyichayev misa." That's only if they're guilty. Kesheva ben Bichri. If they earmark a guilty person, okay. But Rabbi Yochanan says, "No, afa pishe einu chayev misa kesheva ben Bichri." Even if it's an innocent person, if they've picked them, then it's okay to sacrifice them to save others. So comes along Tiferes Yisrael and says, "Okay, so this Nebuch, this child who is half out and now born." Halachically, is earmarked. It's not a random. This is the one that's killing the mother, and therefore, why can't you hand over this fetus, as it were, in order to save the life of the mother? Sheva ben Bichri, okay? And according to Rabbi Yochanan, even maybe when the person is innocent, if they've specified, in this case, the baby has been quote unquote specified. So maybe it's okay. Others say no, it's not the same at all. This fetus is not really like Sheva ben Bichri. You know, in Sheva ben Bichri, somebody is killing somebody. In this case, it's passive, right? And you get back to the position that the Catholics say, although we don't usually apply this, but the Catholics say better two deaths than one murder. Now, we don't normally say this, but once the baby has already emerged, maybe we do say that. We don't kill one person in order to save another person, even if they're both, in the end, going to die. So you see, these are the kinds of issues which are relevant. Okay, let's look at the final few issues, and we'll finish this off today. We've done very well for time. Okay, God forbid there is a fetus which is going to be very sick. We saw Rav Yisraeli last week said that the anguish caused to the parents, the anguish caused to the child, and even if the child is so sick that it's unaware of its own anguish, then it won't be able to keep mitzvot in the future. And he permitted, under certain situations, carrying out an abortus. That was a thalidomide situation. We saw Rav Moshe says no. Because again, it depends on what you say that abortion is. If you say that it's murder, you can't murder somebody to avoid a situation of tragic sickness and deformity. But if you say that it's something else less than murder, it's that it's taking a potential life, it's unlawful wounding, etc., then you may be allowed to do that in order to avoid some kind of grave abnormality. Rav Waldenberg said you're allowed to do that up to 6 months. Others, Poskim, said less than 6 months, but that is still permitted. Some Poskim draw the line at the 40 days, like I said. And mental health also will be relevant, we'll see in a few minutes. Rav Steinberg, I brought you Rav Avram Steinberg, obviously world expert on medical ethics, bless you. And he says, look at number 23, Rav Auerbach, he quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman, prohibits the abortion of a Tay Sachs fetus. Again, this is not meant to be a psak, this is just to understand the general issues, but allows the abortion of an encephalic fetus. I'm sorry if I didn't pronounce that right. In the cases of multifetal pregnancies, such as quadruplets or more, he permits the selective abortion of some of the fetuses to save the mother and the other fetuses. That's interesting. Can you kill one fetus to save another fetus? They're on the same level. Yeah, if you say you can kill a fetus to save the mother because the fetus is less alive, its blood is indeed less red than the mother's. It doesn't have a cheskes chias, but when you're talking about fetus versus fetus, you're all on the same level. Whatever, that's not for now. It matters a great deal if it's early, yes. Well, Rabbi Auerbach rules that an anesthesiologist is forbidden to give an anesthesia to a woman for an abortion that is halakhically prohibited. Interesting, lifnei iver. I said to Michal, you're the anesthesiologist, although it'll come down to the question, it's a lifnei iver shaila now, if I don't do it, will somebody else just get called in to do it? Or am I the only way this can happen? There are 100 lifnei iver questions. I'm working on a checkout in a supermarket and a Jewish person comes through with tray food. Am I allowed to put it through, or should I say, I'm not going to be part of the, enabling you to eat tray food? Okay, so she's just going to go to the next checkout and get you fired. So what's that going to help? So anyway, that's the shaila. I'm not getting into it all now. Even if he may lose his job, an expert in ultrasound should not perform an ultrasound examination for forbidden abortion, but need not lose his job. Interesting, it's a stage beyond. The anesthesiologist is one stage closer to the abortion. Finally, Rav Auerbach permits an autopsy of an abortus after repeated miscarriage in order to determine the reason for repeated miscarriage. That's a separate issue about performing autopsies. The last three questions, let's just deal with here. What about the mother's health? This is a fascinating question. What if, every one of these questions is a tragic question, but let's imagine that the pregnancy is not endangering the mother's life, but the doctors say, if you continue with this pregnancy, you will lose your hearing, or you will lose your sight. Is the mother allowed to abort the fetus in order to preserve an important part of her health? So again, it depends on what the prohibition is. If the prohibition is murder, then no. If the prohibition, says Rav Yaakov Emden, is wasting a potential life, then there may be a productive reason here. You're not wasting it for no reason. It's not shichvat zel levatala. You're doing it to prevent a very serious illness. And I brought you here Rav Uziel, the chief rabbi, Sephardi chief rabbi, permitted an abortion even until late stages if the pregnancy would cause deafness to the mother. So that's another issue. Mental health is fascinating as well, and everyone is much more focused now, obviously, than they were in previous generations, but the Torah is already focused on this from a long time. I want to bring you two sources which I think are important. Tip of the iceberg on this. Now, obviously, mental imbalance to the point that there's a real suicide risk, that's called pikuach nefesh. That's the life of the mother. But even mental stress, anguish, and deterioration, short of that, is very important. Look at number 24. Miyaldin es ha'isha. So he quotes the Gemara there, that how do you help a woman give birth on Shabbos, etc. Amamar, so the Gemara says in Shabbos. Im ha'itzad shricha laner. Let's say the midwives need a light. It's Shabbos. It's a birth on Shabbos. And they need to turn the lights on. Light a candle. So one of the women there is allowed to turn on the lights in order to help with the birth. So the Gemara says, Pshita, of course you can turn on the light. What, are you going to help a woman give birth in the dark? So the Gemara says, no. This is for a blind woman who won't even know if you've turned on the light. Meaning, you've got enough light to do the birth. You're managing fine. And this woman is in distress. And she's saying, are the lights on? Are the lights on? Someone turn on the lights or you won't do the birth properly. Why? She's blind. Why can't you just lie to her? Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's fine. The lights are on. We turn the lights on. You're going to be mechalel Shabbos because there's a woman having a mental anguish because she thinks there's not enough light? Says the Gemara, what might you have thought? Also, since she's not going to see it, then it's prohibited. You're going to calm her down. You're allowed to break Shabbos in order to prevent this woman's mental anguish. Because she'll find out in 5 minutes that you lied to her. And you didn't really turn the light on. And then she'll have a breakdown. And that's dangerous. We can't allow that. This comes up in Shilas on a woman who's going in an ambulance on Shabbos, giving birth. And she says, I can't go unless my husband comes with. Or maybe, I can't go unless someone else comes with. Maybe she doesn't want the husband to come with. Whatever. I need someone else with me in the car. Okay, they're allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos. You can't do anything. And she says, yes, because she is in a mentally anguished situation. Again, that doesn't allow Chilul Shabbos for every case where somebody says, I'm having a mental health issue. That doesn't say, oh, yeah, you can break Shabbos. Not at all. But at a certain point, a posek will assess that the mental health deterioration warrants certain halachic permissions. I brought you a Tosfos in Shabbos, which we had before when we talked about cosmetic surgery. I don't know if anyone remembers all of these shirim, but we talked about cosmetic surgery. So we said, can a man have cosmetic surgery? So what's your problem? I don't like my nose. I don't like my skin. Okay, so that could be an issue. Well, be happy with your nose. And you're a man and not a woman, and therefore there is a halacha of beged isha, of simlat isha. You're not allowed to do effeminate things if you're a man. It is objectively effeminate, says the Gemara, to be worried about the way your nose looks. Okay, fine. Says Tosfos, but it depends. This is talking about a man who's got like scars on his face, and he wants to kind of remove the scars. So is he allowed to remove the scars? The Gemara says if he wants to remove the scars to look nice, he's not allowed to do that. That's simlat isha. He's not. It's an effeminate thing to do. If he wants to remove the scars because they're hurting him, then that's fine. Bishvil tzara, says Tosfos. The im ein lo tzar acher, if he has no actual pain, ele shemitbayesh lelech bein bnei adam. His only issue is not that they're physically hurting him, but he's very embarrassed to walk around looking like this. He's not doing it because he's, vain. He's doing it because it's really hurting his, mental health to walk around. Shari, that's allowed. That's called illness, says Tosfos. De'ein l'chatzar gadol mizeh. There is no pain greater than mental pain. It's very interesting, psak. The whole issue, again, that doesn't give carte blanche in order to just do anything for the purposes of mental health, but it does show that mental health is very serious in halacha, and as I say, people are very much more focused on this than they were, and no doubt rightly so. The last point I just want to make is what if a person is distressed that they are, God forbid, carrying a fetus who is a mamzer? Now, it's very hard halachically to create a mamzer, it has to be from either an adulterous or an incestuous relationship. Baruch Hashem, that is a rarity on both counts. But here, the Horius Brings a case here, number 26. Im haya mamzer tamid chacham, the kohen gadol am haaretz, that a mamzer who's a tamid chacham, or a kohen gadol with the greatest yichus who's an am haaretz, mamzer tamid chacham koed in the kohen gadol am haaretz. The fact that you're a mamzer doesn't decrease in any sense your status as a Jew, and therefore, just because a baby is a mamzer doesn't automatically give a mother the right to terminate, or the ability halachically to terminate the pregnancy. Having said that, Rav Yaakov Emden permitted this. In a certain case, for a woman who had been impregnated and she was married, she was allowed to terminate the fetus. Obviously, each case is a separate shaila, but that also goes to the issue of psychological situations. I'll finish with a line. Rav Steinberg quoted Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who would assess each person individually to work out the psychological reality, and he brings down that later in life he declined to rule on such issues, as he stated he was too old to truly understand the mental health of a young pregnant woman. Isn't that very, very interesting and classically sensitive in the way that Rav Shlomo Zalman was? There comes a point that you just don't get young people anymore. Look, I'm a teacher of young people, and I'd like to feel I haven't got there yet. But I'm getting to the stage that I can see that I will eventually get there. That, like, I just... What's that? It's getting very close. Each generation now is 5 years. The women are now, who I'm teaching aged 18, are living in a completely different mindset than the women I taught who are now 23. Different world, different mindset. And you can definitely see there'll come a point when you just shake your head and you say, I just don't know what's going on anymore. Okay? At that point, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, I can't pass it on psychological issues because they are beyond my remit. Anyway, very interesting last line. Next week, please God, we go to other issues also related to embryos, I believe, before we leave this. But in the meantime, hopefully that's given us some guidance, not practical, but at least theoretical guidance on the issues of abortion. Okay, Ezrat Hashem.